up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Kingdom Two Crowns is the game for this week's episode. Kingdom Two Crowns is a 2D side-scrolling strategy sim, and I see a lot of similarities with games such as Darkwood, Stardew Valley, and even an old one called Sim Tower. But in terms of games in our catalog, maybe a little bit of like Into the Breach, but more a game that we did called Merchant of the Skies. The game originally released in December of 2018 on PC, Mac, PS4, Switch, and Xbox One. And then in April of 2020, it came to mobile in the form of iOS and Android. The game was developed by CoatSync and Noyo Games. So Noyo Games, I believe, is just a one-person team. It's Thomas Vandenberg, and he is responsible for developing most of the Kingdom games, and we'll talk about the series in a second. But CoatSync is a small UK team that's now owned by Thunderful Games, which is kind of a conglomerate. We've talked about them before. But it seems that this game was kind of made in tandem between those two. The game was published by Raw Fury, who we've heard of before. They published Dandera, as well as the other Kingdom games in the series. So speaking of the series, there was an original game released in 2015 called Kingdom. And then from there was Kingdom New Lands. I think that was either a DLC or kind of a newer iteration. And then this game came out. And then in 2023, a game called Kingdom 80s, which I believe is set in the 1980s, came out. So pretty long-standing series there. And so for this game, there was free DLC released in December of 2018, so I believe with the launch on console and PC and Mac. Shogun DLC was released, which was a new setting for the game. And then in April of 2020, I believe, coinciding with the mobile release, Deadlands was released. So two free DLCs, which added new settings that you can kind of pick from at the beginning of the game. And then finally, in November of 2021, The Norse Lands was another setting released, but this was a paid DLC. And I believe at this point, they're actually planning for another one called Call of Olympus, but the date that that is releasing has yet to be announced. The game has multiple editions on different platforms. So there is a Norse Lands edition that comes with the game and the Norse Lands DLC. There's a Jarl edition, which comes with the game, the DLC for the Norse Lands, as well as the OST. I don't know if on some platforms both of those are still available. I think on Steam, the Norse Lands editions is not available. And then finally, in May of 2024, they released the Imperial edition. So this was the game, Kingdom Two Crowns, the New Lands game, so the previous game in the series, the Norse Lands DLC, as well as their newer game, the Kingdom 80s. This game had a physical release, and it was referred to as Kingdom Majestic, and that was released in July of 2020. That was a combination between the publisher Raw Fury and a publisher called Microids Indie, which is a French publisher of physical games. So that came with Kingdom New Lands, Two Crowns, as well as the DLC for Two Crowns. And there was a standard edition and a limited edition. The standard edition was pretty much available at all retailers, but the limited edition, I believe, is only available in Europe. And that comes with sort of like some art cards, the soundtrack, but also some other physical goodies there. The game released with an MSRP of $19.99. That DLC, The Norse Lands, is available for $6.99, and The Norse Lands Edition, which I'm not sure is available on all platforms, but that is $24.99. So if you want the game and that Norse Lands DLC, I guess you can save, what, $2 there. And then the Jarl Edition is $31.99. And the Imperial Edition, that includes Kingdom 2 Crowns and the New Lands game, the previous game, as well as all the DLC for both, that is available for $39.99. I am not too sure on the prices for release of the physical edition, the Majestic, whether the standard or the limited. I cannot really nail that down. I know they're available on Amazon currently, but the prices vary depending on the console. Runtime of the game, this is a little tricky because this, in my opinion, is one of those games that you could really just hack away at it pretty much forever. But if you want to quote unquote complete the game, I believe it should take you between 20 and 25 hours. And that consists of beating all of the islands. I think in one of the settings, because like I said, you get with the DLC, the free DLC, you get the option of choosing your setting. So I believe that is if you beat all of the islands or all the levels in one of the settings. But of course, there is a ton you can do. You can really get lost in this game. And it is broken up a lot in terms of like feeling like you could walk away, but you could easily put over 50 hours into this game. And for our PlayStation listeners, this does have a platinum trophy, less than 1% though. And a lot of really tough trophies that would potentially cause some grinding. Not something that I'm going to go for, but if you're a big trophy head, maybe you want to have at it. Me, I bought this on PS4, the Jarl Edition, and I got it for $12.49. And I've been playing it on my PS5 and my Portal, kind of going back and forth. Definitely a nice game to play on the Portal in bed. And I put close to 15 hours into it, being super thorough, really kind of building my camp. I'm kind of trial and erroring things on my own, similar to how I play a game like Darkwood, where I could easily move on, or I should be moving on, but I'm really kind of taking my time. I did beat one of the islands, or accomplish the goal at one of the islands, but the game has 5 of them, so definitely taking my time there. In terms of recommendation, no one really recommended this to me. I had never heard of this series, just saw it on sale. It seemed kind of cool, and I'm a big strategy game guy. I definitely play a lot of Stardew Valley, so kind of resource management is right up my alley. Talk gameplay for Kingdom 2 Crowns. So this is a strategy game, and the detail is going to be in the systems and the feedback loops, but let's get started with the basics. So this is a 2D game. It's side-scrolling. You can kind of go left or right, and you can explore left and right, and you will want to do that, and you will want to go back and forth just to check on things on either end. And you do this on horseback. Your character is on horseback, and there is a button that you can hold that will make your horse run, but your horse does have like a stamina meter. It's not present. It's not something that you can see, but you will see them eventually huff and puff from their mouth. And the frequency of that is kind of trying to communicate to you. If you let it run for too long, they will huff and puff and stand still, and then you'll have to wait sort of a cool down period. But there's nothing, there's no meter, there's no anything. It's all visual. It's all just kind of you feeling it out. And the other major thing that you're going to do is offer coins when you have them. And as you're walking, you can press a button and you'll release a coin into the world and it'll just sit there. Characters walking by can pick it up. And then you can hold the button when you come across a prompt. And you're going to see these a lot, and the prompts are going to have clear indicators for how many coins you need. And you just hold it and the coins will kind of pop up and fill in the meter. And this is going to be used to build things, to open things, to activate things. This is essentially your action command. This is what is going to initiate things happening. You will have a pouch for holding these coins, and it'll be in the top right corner of the screen, and it'll kind of go back and forth between you being able to see inside of it, being transparent. It does have a max holding, and as you get coins, you'll see them kind of drop in, and they'll take up space, and you'll have a vague sense of how much space you have left. But if you're holding too much where the coins are piled all the way at the top, they will eventually start to spill over and then out into the lands, and you'll kind of lose them. But you will be doing a lot of collecting of coins, and it's very simple. If you see a coin on the ground, you just walk into it, and you'll collect it, and they never disappear. If they come out for whatever reason and they're sitting there, they're always going to stay there. So let's get into the progression of the game, at least in the micro sense. So a lot of what you're going to be doing is involving coins and choices for what to do with those coins. You will need to get coins as you go through the game. You will start the game with some coins, but you can't make them, so you do need to retrieve them in various ways. And you'll do that by getting the people or the workers that are your recruits to do certain things, and they'll go out and they'll get coins, and then eventually you can get them from them. But you can also explore left to right, and sometimes you'll come across chests where if you just stand in front of them, they'll empty out, and then you pick up the coins that kind of scatter about. And then spending coins is going to be the economy. It's going to be what you're doing primarily. And you're going to spend coins to build structures, whether it's walls, whether it's archer spots, to upgrade existing structures, whether it's those walls or archer spots or other things that'll come along. You'll use it to hire new recruits. You'll use it to equip them with certain things and give them sort of a task. And you'll use them to unlock access to things. It could be more advanced options, whether it's on your island or in the game, sort of as a permanent thing as a whole. And when it comes to building things, it's not that you can build them randomly just wherever you are. There are going to be specific locations where you'll see a prompt and you'll start to see a pattern for the location or something in the background or the environment that sticks out that says, oh, I'm probably going to be able to build a wall there or build a tower there or something like that. So it's not random in terms of being able to build anything. There's always going to be specific prompts, and it's going to be intentional, especially in terms of the spacing of where you're able to build certain things. In terms of the macro sense, when you start the game or when you die or when you kind of hit a load screen or you're traveling between islands or worlds, you'll see sort of these commands that are dictating how you should go about playing the game. It says some vague command words like build or protect or conquer or defend. So that's really the name of the game, all of those types of things. You're building, you're defending your home, you're going out and trying to expand or explore. So when you start your campaign, like I said, you have you, your character, you arrive on an island, you have some money in your sack and maybe some people around you that you can recruit. And then as you walk, you will arrive at your camp or what will be your camp. And it's a very distinct thing in the background that'll have a prompt for you to put coins towards building it. It is a predetermined location. It's not something random. Again, all of these places where you can build things are going to be predetermined. So you'll build up your camp, you'll spend coins to settle. And then after you do that and you start to hire people, then you can start to build things in both directions. So to your left or to your right, you might want to put up walls, but again, only where you see the prompt to do so. But you will have locations scattered about where you can build these things up, and you can build in multiple progression. Like, you don't just need to build one wall, you can build multiple if you go further to the left or further to the right. But in terms of the frequency and the placement of these potential structures, it is predetermined and it is very intentional for spacing purposes, and we'll talk about why that's significant. Sometimes you'll be going to the left or to the right to explore, and instead of seeing a place where you can build something, you'll just see trees. And so you will need to clear these out. You will need to knock these down. Each tree you come across will have a prompt to put up one coin, and then one of your workers or whoever can come and chop it down. And so you are going to want to clear out trees, because you'll see once the trees go down, sort of in the foreground there, some other prompt will be available for you to, again, build a wall or build an archer tower or some of these other structures. When it comes to your people, you will see people wandering around and you can recruit them, and you will be able to find these people wandering around again, exploring to the left or to the right. And what you'll do is you'll toss one coin in the air. And when you come across a person who is not a recruit, who's just wandering, as soon as you toss the coin in the air, they'll run towards it and they'll take it, and then they'll run back to your camp, whichever way that is. Once they're in your camp, they'll be looking for an assignment or a job or something to equip them so that they'll have a job and a purpose, and then they'll go about doing it. So as soon as you build the camp and you start to build walls, you'll start to see these stations pop up for your recruits to be able to equip themselves. So the first stations that you'll see are the hammer station and the bow station. What you'll have to do is once you recruit a character, you'll have to go to the station and then pay to have them craft a bow or craft a hammer. I think the hammer will cost 3 coins, the bow will cost 2, and you can sit a couple of them each at the stand. I think you can sit a max of 3, so that anytime you get a new recruit, they can run back to the camp and pick up either a bow or a hammer and then go about doing their duties in that job. Once they are that job, they'll kind of free roam about your camp and they'll go into their auto abilities, which we'll talk about in a minute. So the name of the game early on and throughout the game is really going to be Expand and Explore. So like I said, you're clearing trees, you're finding more locations that are intentionally put there to build certain things. Extending your border is something that you will do, because when you have a border, when you have a wall on each side, that pretty much encapsulates your safe space where your recruits can come back. As you progress and explore and expand your border, you'll start to clear away trees, and you'll notice that there are different types of build sites. You'll see a site around a river where you can build it up multiple times and turn it into a farm. You'll see an old shack that you can turn into a recruit place where you can slowly over time get more recruits. You'll also see a location where you have to build up a ship. Also, while you're exploring, you're going to discover certain things. You might discover chests, like we said, that would have coins that can really help you, a new kind of currency that can allow you to unlock other things. You might see statues, and these will require offerings of coins or other currency that will upgrade certain job types to maybe be more efficient or to be better at what they do. You may also discover a new horse or access to a new thing to ride, a new animal that might have varying speed, it might have varying stamina, or it might actually even be able to attack, which is really cool. And then you'll discover these sort of permanent upgrade sites that'll unlock certain tiers of upgrades for you to be able to upgrade walls a certain way or other structures a certain way. And these are going to be placed very specifically. There might be one on an island. But what's really cool is once you unlock these are permanent for your entire campaign. So you won't have to worry about having to find this again. So speaking of upgrading, you're going to be upgrading a lot of things. So namely, you're going to be upgrading structures. So for example, when you go to a location that has a wall, it might cost 1 coin to put in there to build it. And it's a very simple sort of edge of a wooden fence. And then again, as you walk by, you might see a prompt for 3 coins, and now you're going to upgrade it. You're going to want to upgrade it because you want better walls with a sturdier defense to fortify. Maybe you upgrade things that have better function. For example, the archer towers, you might upgrade them to a point where you can, instead of putting one archer up there, a second archer will come up there. It might upgrade the size of the wall, how high it is, which can really kind of protect you. Something else you can upgrade, and this is going to be very important for progressing through the game, is your main camp. So as soon as you get to camp, you spend coins to settle there, but then as you're moving around, when you come back, you'll see a prompt for more coins to upgrade it. So this is very important because you're going to unlock different options of prompts to do at the camp, or you might unlock an NPC that comes out. Something else you might unlock is new job stations. That might involve you expanding your border walls enough, but you're going to have job stations where you can have farmers, have pikers, have knights, all kinds of things to help defend your camp or help bring you in more money. So let's talk about the recruits that you have, because their behaviors are going to be sort of automatic, but it is important to know how they're going to behave. So like I said, the first sort of iteration, you'll have access to hammers and bows, and then when you craft them and a recruit picks it up, they'll turn into a hammer person or an archer. A hammer person is going to be very important because when you want to build things, whether it's walls or upgrade structures, they are going to have to run there and hammer it out, and it will take a little time. But if you have multiple of them going to the same site, it'll go twice as fast. Interesting to note, when you're building something, it turns it into like a scaffolded version of itself, and then they have to come and build it up. While it's being built, you don't get the function of it. So if it's, for example, like an archer tower, if you want to upgrade it, your archer will come down and kind of walk around while they're building it. That same thing goes for an outside wall. If you want to upgrade an outside wall, you better be sure about the timing of doing it, because the wall is going to be then open to the camp. So I highly suggest doing a lot of these upgrades during the day. What's interesting about your recruits is, like I said, coins are going to stay out on the land if they get released into the world and you can run by and pick them up. But if any of your recruits walk by them, they will collect them. And then next time you're next to them, they will kind of throw them out into the world at you. So it's really nice when you have a lot of recruits going around, so you don't have to worry about not picking up gold, because a lot of them in their patrolling, they're going to pick up a lot of free gold and keep it with them. And then next time they come into contact with you, they're going to shove it out for you. So that's really nice. A lot of their behavior is going to revolve around this day-night cycle. So there are going to be days that pass by. It's going to be daytime. It's going to be nighttime. And so what they do, or where these different recruits will reside, depending on their job, is also going to be dictated by this day-night cycle. So sometimes during the day, a lot of them are going to free roam out, especially the archers, so that they can go and sort of kill animals and bring back coins. But once it turns to nighttime, they're going to come inside that outside wall to be safe. But also, if there happen to be things that come along, it'll shoot over the wall. Same thing for a lot of your hammer people, your farmers. They're going to go out beyond your walls in the day if you dictate them to do so. Like if you want to build something that's far out of your walls, the hammer people are going to run out there and do it. If you have a farm that's outside your walls, they'll run and go tend to it. And then when night comes, they'll kind of run back. But this is really going to dictate your build strategy, because if you have a farm that your guys are running to, you don't want it to be too far from the outside of your wall. So again, you're constantly discovering different locations to build different things at, but you're going to want to expand your borders so that if you have recruits running out, they don't have to run too far to get back to safety within your walls. So safety is important, because at night, there are going to be enemies that can potentially come and try to harm you or try to break down your walls. So basically, every night, there's a chance that on either side, you might get enemies running in, and they're basically going to come in and bum rush your outside wall at night. So this is why it's good to have archers. This is why it's good to have archer towers, because if you have an archer tower within your wall, they'll shoot over the wall if they can see it. But you can also have an archer tower outside of your last wall that can still shoot if they have enemies approaching, because really your enemies are only going to try to bum rush your outer wall. So they won't worry if you have a tower or something like that. They're not going to knock that down. So your archers are safe. But any archers that aren't in a tower are going to be just inside your outside wall, and they're going to shoot kind of an arch over top of the wall to try and hit enemies. Enemies will do damage to your wall, which is why it's important to upgrade them. But if for any reason they happen to break down the wall completely, what is going to happen is anyone who's right inside of that wall will start to retreat inward to the next wall. And these enemies kind of move pretty fast, and they do like a little dive attack. So if they hit any of your characters, what will happen is they'll lose their weapon. They'll lose their job pretty much, and they'll go back to just being a recruit. So they won't really have a purpose. If they get hit a second time, then they won't be a recruit anymore. They'll just be sort of a wandering person who then you will have to re-recruit. So if they lose their weapon, you will have to craft another weapon for them to go grab. But if they get hit too many times, they're just going to be a wandering person that you're going to have to spend a coin on to recruit and kind of start that process of getting them back all over again. Typically, the enemies, if they grab a weapon that gets dropped, or if they grab a coin, they will run away. So once that happens, that's kind of an indicator that, like, okay, they're kind of retreating. But you are involved as well, and you're kind of free roaming around, so they can hit you, which is their ultimate goal. So if they hit you and you have any gold, you'll spill out some gold and they may take it and run. If you don't have any gold and you get hit, what happens is your crown flies off. And this is very important, because if the enemy catches your crown and runs away, you will die, essentially. You'll lose the game. But we'll talk about dying in a second. If your crown gets knocked loose, it kind of moves in slow motion, and you can kind of chase it down. So if it gets knocked behind you into your camp, like, you can easily chase it down and get it back, and you'll be fine. And these enemies are going to come from enemy portals. So you will definitely see these or come across these as you're exploring outside of your camp, left or right. And these are essentially just like a rock structure. At night, they will spawn enemies to come to your camp. But if you get too close to them, regardless of whether it's day or night, they will kind of feel threatened and they will spawn enemies. When you get further on in the game, there is a way to attack them when you're able to assign knights. What will happen is at the edge of your camp, wherever the furthest wall is, you'll see a prompt to put 4 coins up to send your knight party in one direction to kind of fight whatever's there. And that's really how you damage things, especially the enemy structures. So let's talk kind of big picture stuff. Let's talk scope and how it paces out. So I've been saying this a couple times, but there are 5 islands in the game. So when you're in a location with just a 2D side scrolling, you're essentially on one island. What you can do is, like I said, there is a prompt to build a ship when you come across it while you're exploring. And this ship, once you get it back to full strength, will allow you to take some of the people that you have recruited and go and sail off to the next island. Or if you've unlocked multiple islands, you'll be able to travel maybe back to the original one or choose between them. Now, each island has some specific things. So they will have enemies, they will have enemy portals, but they will all have unique discoveries, whether it's specific statues that will boost certain jobs that you have in your camp, different horses. Each island will maybe have one of these, but it is specific and it is intentional. They will also have potential unlocks for opening up upgrade tiers. So for example, in one of the islands, there's a stone mine that if you unlock and get it running, then you will be able to upgrade walls past like the sturdy wooden fence. Now you'll be able to upgrade it to stone walls. And these are permanent. So once you unlock them, they will always be available to you, whether you die, whether you're on any of the islands. And all of these islands will have sort of a source of the enemies. So far, it seems to always be sort of a cave that you can go through an enemy portal into when you reach the edge of the 2D side scrolling. And that's where you have to like deal with the source of the enemies on that island. And you'll have to do something very specific to do that. As you get towards some of the later islands, it gets progressively harder. I would say the enemies are definitely more aggressive. They're more frequent. Maybe the number of portals is higher. Sometimes there are 2 portals kind of back to back in very short sequence. But overall, in terms of the goal of the game, I would say that a lot of what you're doing is building up your island's defense, where your camp is, building up your walls on each side, and then eventually hopping onto the next island. But overall, I think you have to defeat the source of the enemies on each island. So I said so far, I've defeated 1. There are 5 islands. So I think that is essentially what is being talked about in terms of how long the game is. I'm trying to beat all of these sources for each island. So beating 5 of those sort of boss things. And in terms of accessibility, time passes in this game. Like I said, it counts days. There's a day-night cycle, but there's no rush. Similar to a game like Darkwood, like I said, I played this game and sometimes I kind of stayed in one location longer than most people would, but I really liked sort of the feedback loops or the resource management or going out and finding things and coming back and surviving a night. So similar here, there's really no rush to advance to the next island or to try and defeat the source of the enemies on each island. You can really explore, you can take your time, you can unlock things, travel at your pace. Even when you find the boat on another island, you can travel back to one of your earlier islands. It's interesting though, because there's very minimal guidance in this game and there's minimal words. There sometimes will be like a floating ghost, especially in the beginning, or sometimes I think the game will sense that you're stuck or you don't quite know what to do or you're meandering, and this ghost will float by and it'll say, follow me, and it'll point you in a direction, and then it'll point you to a specific spot and it'll say, use your coins here. This is for this. You should trust this or you should go along with this. So there is some sense of direction sometimes, but visually there are a lot of signs and markings that are giving you context as to what to do or what things are for. But I will say there's really minimal real-time consequences to the choices that you make, because a lot of them are going to be build certain things or upgrade certain things. Once you get rolling, you're really going to have the option of finding a lot of coins, whether it's from your recruits, whether it's from exploring. So if you choose to upgrade something and you wanted to upgrade something else, there's really not going to be like this dire thing where like now you're kind of stuck or now you won't be able to upgrade that thing. Things tend to roll very quickly. I will say one of the things that will have consequence is if you're trying to upgrade your outside wall and it's nighttime and then all of a sudden enemies come. Because again, when you upgrade it, it turns into scaffolding and it doesn't serve a function as a wall until they're done rebuilding it. But once enemies are coming, they're going to start to attack your people and then it's going to be chaos. So I learned that sort of the hard way. The game does have a difficulty setting. I believe it's easy, normal, and hard. I played this on normal, and it's a pretty fair challenge. Okay, so if you're not really up for the challenge, I think easy mode might be better for you. I can't imagine what the hard mode is like. It's probably really tough. I don't know if that affects sort of the permanence of things or the ability to go back after you die. And speaking of dying, so I've been playing it on normal, and what happens when you die, like I said, you lose the crown or an enemy runs off with it. What'll happen is you'll kind of revert back to the first island and you'll get the original horse. But what's interesting is all the upgrade tiers are permanent, but all of the camps that you built and the walls that you built, they're kind of going to function in real time, whether you're there or not. So they're going to maintain themselves as best as they can. But if you're away from like the third island or the second island for a long time, some of the walls will definitely deteriorate. Even if you've built up the camp with a ton of recruits that can defend themselves, I think over time it does slowly deteriorate anyway. But just be aware of that. Once you die and come back, sort of the things that you built for the most part are going to be there. The people are going to be there. It just takes you coming back to that island and trying to pick up the pieces. Let's talk about the vibe of Kingdom 2 Crowns. So let's start with the visuals. So this game is pixels. It is super pixelated. Reminds me a lot of games like Infernax and Unsighted that were super pixelated. Not a lot of words at all. Maybe when the floating ghost comes in, there might be some words on the screen, but really no words. Some pictures or markings that help you, but I will say reading the pixels and sort of what's going on, it is pretty clear. It's not something that's like super obscure. In terms of the background, you're going to see a lot of faraway landscapes in the background. It might be trees, it might be a lot of clouds or blue skies or sunny, and you might see the sun come across. Other times there might be storms and you'll see a lot of clouds coming in and rain coming down. You'll see the moon at night sometimes. Sometimes you'll see a blood moon and it makes the clouds have this red hue. Sometimes you'll see these giant statues, almost looks like Olympians or something like that, or like Michelangelo sculptures sort of in the sky. No matter what, the background is never stoic. You know, as you're moving left to right, it might be also moving to kind of have the illusion of it moving or you moving, but scenes will come and go in the background. Again, if the weather changes, if the lighting changes, it's definitely a lot faded. It feels very far away. It's not really defined. And then in contrast, in terms of the foreground, this is of course where you have the characters, the buildings, the things you interact with, definitely more defined, more detailed, although pixelated. Trees are really interesting because you come across them, you have to clear them, but they seem unique. It's not like it's just the same tree over and over. It's different hues of the trunk or the bark or the leaves, or it might be angled a certain way. They might be curved around each other. It's just really interesting how the trees come out visually. And a lot of times it seems like they're on top of each other, as well as the prompts to knock them down. But really, it's just adding so much dimension, I feel, both in like the 3D dimension sense, but also the fact that you have different trees. Just visually, it speaks a lot. And then you have your buildings and the scaffolding that you put up to get the workers to do it. So a lot of these are going to be made of wood, and you'll see the wood planks, you'll see the logs, and then finally when you get to stone, you'll see these stone columns and you'll see the individual stones and sort of how they square up. And what's interesting is once you build walls on both sides of your camp, you'll see sort of this very faint background of the type of wall that you have, sort of making it seem like your camp is surrounded by this wall, even though it's only in 2D and you only have a wall on both sides. In terms of the workers or the recruits, episodes, you'll get sort of varying brightness in terms of their character and how alive they seem when it comes to how progressed they are of being hired as a recruit. So for example, when you see wandering people that aren't your recruits roaming around, they're really faint. Their coloration is faint and their features are faint. But once you give them a coin, all of a sudden they have a little more spark, a little more life. And then they run back to your camp. Once they get a job, once they pick up a weapon, then all of a sudden a lot more detailed, a lot more colorful, or at least a lot brighter. So I do like that progression that's really trying to communicate something to you visually. When you see coins, they're very shiny. They're very obvious when they pop out. The colors, it's a really broad color range from the trees in the forest and the greens and the browns to when you clear the environment and you see sort of this barren or dusty clearing, whether it's the wood that you build up or just the open landscape. And the enemies that you'll see, a lot of these look the same. They're just kind of these dark black hooded things with a purple face. This dark purple face, and really distinct and obviously a nice contrast with all the colorful characters or recruits that you have. And in terms of effects, a lot of things that you see, like I said, there's a day-night cycle, and you'll really feel that. You really feel the light go down, and you'll see torches come up and sort of light in spotty areas. You'll see the rain come down. It's really interesting walking through the trees. So obviously you have to clear off trees in order to get locations to build things. But if you're just walking through and exploring, if you have a bunch of trees, when you're walking past them, the lights dim a lot. So sometimes it can be a little confusing if it's turning into nighttime or if you're just in a forest. And I really like the feel of when you're going through that. In terms of audio, I love the music in this game. It is so adventurous. It has a settler vibe or militant at times. Other times it's journeying through the forest and sort of the lusciousness or the innocence of forest creatures. But a lot of just explore and construct. You feel like you're trying to accomplish something or really go on an adventure. And a lot of times there are somber notes. It seems very meaningful. It feels like in a lot of these individual tracks, there's some progression. And I mean that in terms of like audibly, like you feel this emotional progression throughout the track when it hits a certain note or a certain minor or dip. You get this feeling of an adventure of learning. And I really love it. This soundtrack is beautifully orchestrated. There's piano, there's strings, there's woodwinds. It reminds me a lot of sort of futuristic tones sometimes of games like Headlander and Citizen Sleeper and even Unsighted. It really has that atmospheric sense. And that makes sense because this is the same guy who did Citizen Sleeper and the soundtrack for that. So definitely a lot of emotional pulls and tugs at times mixed with adventurous. And the sound effects, very clear, very helpful. And there's no talking. There's just music and some sound effects and there's no words. So really the sound effects are the confirmation and the help that you need to know that something happened, whether you collected a coin, whether you built something or upgraded something, whether it's while something's being built, you can hear the hammers going, just so you know that you are progressing things, so you hear these sound cues. And in terms of themes and setting, with the different lands and the DLC, you can kind of pick yours, so whether it's Deadlands, whether it's the main one, which is this sort of medieval type in the forest, or the new DLC, the Norse lands, but it's going to be Monarch and their subjects. In the main campaign, you're this queen, and the queen's crown is what dictates your ruling, which is why you don't want to lose it. There's wood, there's stone, you're farming, there's swords and arrows, and you're building up a ship. There's nothing really advanced in terms of technology, but the enemies are interesting. They're named as Greed, so it's like they're all this entity that is Greed. They're kind of alien-like. They have these stone portals, and it seems like maybe some advanced technology. Some of them have like tentacles, so really that black and purple is kind of strange. But there's something about you're conquering the land or settling. Everything you do is kind of taking over the land. You're clearing out trees. Your archers are killing wildlife to get coins. And so there's a little bit of a meta aspect because the enemy is called Greed. Are they your greed for trying to expand your civilization and conquer things? I don't know. There could be some meta stuff there. But I really like how it's generally just put there for you to decide.
Thank you.
let's wrap up the conversation about Kingdom Two Crowns. This is a satisfying game. For me, there's such depth of this endless build and expand and upgrade loop, and it's there if you want it. You don't necessarily need to get lost in it. I will say a certain degree of it is needed for learning how things go, but I am pretty thorough and I linger a lot, like in games like Stardew and Darkwood. Like, I really try to maximize efficiency, resource management. A lot of this is learned by doing. There's minimal instruction. The game is not that complex, but in terms of things happening or not understanding what certain things mean, it does take some time. The game is helpful at times. Like I said, that floating ghost maybe sense when you're struggling or when you're lost. Having the difficulty modes is really nice. I think putting it on easy, if you're not someone who really wants to get their butt kicked or suffer the consequences of enemies, again, I think normal is a nice challenge, which is what I'm playing it on. I love the atmosphere in the game, the music. I really have been looking if there's a vinyl soundtrack. I don't see it for this. I think New Lands had a vinyl soundtrack release, but I'm hoping maybe, because I really do love this music. In terms of value, I think $20 is solid for this game. Two rounds of free DLC. The game is really jam-packed with content and replayability, and you can kind of jump out or feel accomplished when you're ready and move on. But there's really so much that you can explore and find, especially in terms of secrets and discoveries. I'm not sure how the setting varies with the different DLC options, but I really like the main game and sort of the medieval kind of forest exploration on the different islands setting. But $20, great value. Anytime it's on sale, I think that's great. I got it for $12.49, and I think that was a really good price. If you're any kind of sim or strategy or resource management fan, I think you're really going to eat this up if you already don't know about the series. But if you're someone who likes Stardew Valley or Merchant of the Skies, which we did an episode on, I feel like you're really going to eat this up. And if you're really into it, the series is super extensive, but this game has a lot of charm and a lot of forgiveness while you're learning. And so I think it's really worth your time and your money, so I highly recommend this game. Alright, that's gonna wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we've found for you.